Everybody set to go. We'll get underway. First off, thank you to everybody for coming. I believe it or not, really do try to avoid interim hearings. And I deeply appreciate members coming in from all across the state to visit with us about the Wakota Bridge project. I also want to single out our friends at MnDOT. They have made terrific efforts over the last several months, and I appreciate it, to produce lots and lots of documents. I've taken to kindly referring to it as Fort Wakota, that I built in my office out of 80 boxes now that have been produced by MnDOT in response to a document request, and I really do appreciate their efforts in producing those documents. As you'll recall, we've kind of gone back and forth with MnDOT. They originally produced, I think it was 6 boxes. I came to the hearing, and it was very clear that they had not produced all of the documents relative to the Wakota Bridge project. And went back to the well, found out that, lo and behold, there were a few more documents to the tune of 74 more boxes. It's not an easy effort to put that together, and I very much appreciate their efforts in doing so. Finally, before we get underway, when you get 80 boxes of documents, they don't go unread, and it's not an easy task to go through all that. John Reich, Dave Sullivan, Chris Kwopik, before that Elizabeth Emerson, from our staff, as well as our committee staff and folks like Matt Burris and other people that have been of help to this committee, their efforts were well and beyond the call of duty, and it's much appreciated. That all said, to the outside observer, the Wakota Bridge appears to be under the direction of Britney Spears. I mean, about every time we turn around, something else crazy and inexplicable happens. First, it was, and Matt, why don't you, or Chris, will you put up the overview?
I just, hey, Mr. Chairman, could I ask just a question before we go down the line like we did last time, where we're asked to sit politely for an hour without being asked a question. Dale asked a question. I looking at the book, I see we've got some, I don't know if this is a schedule or a table of contents of what's inside our list or whatever, but you mentioned Britney Spears. Are we here for the Moment of Truth television show? Are we going to hook people up to a lie detector? Are you going to invite Barry Bonds? And yeah, you don't want that money. None of us do. Why are we here? If we're discussing a hearing of overrun or over budget and a hearing in the bidding process, why isn't this before the Transportation Committee?
Thank you for the question. It wasn't my intention to hook folks up to polygraphs. I mean, I don't really think that's a very reasonable suggestion, Representative Zellers, but if that's what you desire to do, and want to make arrangements for it, I guess you
can. Well, no, I just, once you see things on YouTube, it has that kind of television effect, and the Moment of Truth came to mind when we're going to ask people to come in, and out of our committee's jurisdiction, I think we, you know, raised enough of that stink last time. I had thought that you'd had all your questions answered and we wouldn't be back to doing this again, but unfortunately we are, and, you know, I guess I just want to know how long we're going to spend here on a second day for a committee, for an issue that isn't germane to our committee. You know, the commerce issue, you know, maybe some bubble gum and dental floss, you could make that connection, but if we're going to discuss the bidding process, to me that is a transportation issue, and I guess I'm curious as to what Chair Leader has said about this.
The award of contracts, the bidding process, all of the commerce issues obviously fall within the purview of this committee. This Wakota Bridge is a key connector in the southeast metro area, and it gets, I'd suggest to you that you talk to the owners of Tanucci's Restaurant or Fury Motors or Tadell McGuire at Stockman about the impact of this failure to get the bridge done on time. It was supposed to be done 2 months ago. What I want to explore is what in fact has, and I thought we had done a good job of that. Some issues have arisen since then, and actually you'll note that this hearing was scheduled before the bids were even open. My hope, quite frankly, Representative Zellers, was to come in here, do my mea culpa, and say, gosh darn it, and that y'all were right. You said we needed to go back, rebid this thing, even though it took a year and a half to rebid it, which I think is a little beyond reasonable, but that the bids would come in lower. I thought somehow they knew that they were going to get bids that were $40 million or $45 million. In fact, what it turned out to be is apparently they're about to hire the same contractor that they fired a year ago that was willing to do it for a lower price a year ago, and now they're going to hire him to do it at a higher price. It's not to mix metaphors, but it's sort of the Paris Hilton approach to bidding. If the price isn't high enough, you go out and you get a higher price. And I think we at least owe it to the taxpayers of Minnesota, to the businesses out in the Southeast Metro, all of those commuters, and MnDOT, to be able to provide an explanation as to exactly what took place there. Do I expect to be here all day? No. In fact, my hope is not to be. But I want to put it in perspective of kind of where things are at. I've got a one-page overview because I know that the Wakota Bridge may not be front and center for everybody in the room. Representative Begum, Senator Seltzman, excused from that because obviously it's right here in front of them, people like me as well. We'll try to put things in perspective, then call up our friends from MnDOT to sort of go through those issues and call it a day.
And thank you for that, Mr. Chairman. The issues relating to the delays and MnDOT delays in road construction, bidding process, again, I don't begrudge those issues. I'd like the answers to those too, but I'm not on Transportation Committee, and those seem like issues for the Transportation Committee. And I'll just ask again, what has Chair Leader done with this issue? What has he brought before his committee, who, again, are the experts? I think we last time got into stuff about asking how and why scaffolding is still left up around a bridge and what happens to it and when is it taken down. And, I can understand a road not being finished. I have 610 in my backyard. Believe me, I understand what happens when roads don't get finished to business. But, again, that's not the point of the question, is why are we, as the Commerce Committee, debating or discussing or clearing up the bidding process? That, to me, first hearing, maybe, I guess, your committee, your beat, you can do what you want, but when it comes to discussing, when I saw the agenda, and all the agenda said was to discuss the bidding process, it brings up questions of why we're here, why we're spending the taxpayers' money on a hearing down here when, if the committee that handles transportation issues isn't dealing with it, why are we? And if that's an inside baseball fight, that's fine, but I'm just curious as to what Chair Leader and the Transportation Committee is doing with this issue.
And it's certainly within their purview as well. If we were $45 over budget on this Wakota Bridge project, would be one thing. But in fact, I think it's going to end up being $45 million or $50 or $60 million. I think it deserves some scrutiny, and that's what we're going to try to do here today. With that, Chris, would you put up the overview?
I'm sorry, but I didn't hear what Chair Leader had done, Mr. Chairman.
I don't know. With due respect. I believe that he's following up on transportation issues generally. Would hope that, and certainly he would have the ability to follow up on the Wakota Bridge as well.
So all the information here, was he brought this information? Did he have an opinion? I guess if we need to ask that, I guess we can, but I don't understand why he has either, we don't have some opinion, a letter, a finding, his two cents on what's going on here when he's the chair of the Transportation Committee.
Yeah. Well, I'd welcome them to weigh in as well.
So you haven't asked him about
No. No, and I don't. Moreover, I don't ask my mom if I can go out and play anymore. If Chair Leader wants to review it, he's certainly welcome to do so, and I'd invite him to do that. But I don't have to ask permission to keep an eye on the taxpayers' money, and that's exactly what we're going to do. Moreover, nor do I have to ask permission to follow up on the concerns of people like Three Motors and Tenucci's and Stockman's and all those commuters that are sitting in traffic. And if you want to, Representative Zellers, this afternoon I'll buy you dinner at Tenucci's if we can get there in half an hour or less. If it takes more than half an hour, you buy. How's that sound? With that, let's go through the introduction quickly. It should be a one-page. I don't know if members got this or if we just have it up on the screen, but to put this in perspective, the Wakota Bridge is one of the most over-budget and most seriously delayed highway projects in the United States, not just in Minnesota, but in the United States, and we'll compare it with some other projects shortly. But MnDOT originally approved the project and the bids with Lunda Construction in February 2003, and construction to begin in April of 2003. Two separate bridges were to be constructed over the Mississippi River, one carrying westbound traffic, one carrying eastbound. The projected completion date for both bridges was originally set for November 17, 2007. But 2 months ago, this entire project was supposed to be done. The project has been marked by serious delays and cost overruns. Around September of 2004, you'll recall, and there was quite a bit of media attention, inspectors found hairline cracks in the already poured bridge segments on the westbound bridge. These cracks were later attributed by MnDOT to a design flaw by HNTB, which was the design firm that did the bridge. In an attempt to remedy the problem, all of the segments were retrofitted, which added 14 months and at least $15 million to the project. Other delays were also encountered, including a problem with bypassing a wastewater main. An independent dispute review board, which MnDOT, by the way, insisted upon having involved, found that MnDOT was responsible for more than 7 months of delays on that issue. The first bridge, the westbound portion, was finally completed in May of 2006. Chris, you want to go to the next slide? Nearly 5 years after the project began, very little work has been done on the eastbound bridge. In 2006, MnDOT engaged in extensive negotiations with London to complete the redesigned eastbound bridge, taking into account the new design. In November of 2006, London made an offer of $56.8 million, as well as a not-to-exceed offer of $58.9 million. MnDOT rejected this offer, even though internal documents showed that MnDOT estimated the total cost to be somewhere between $52 and $57.7 million. MnDOT stated their reason at the time and also came to the hearing and said they rejected the offer by London because it was too high and it was not in the interest of Minnesota taxpayers. MnDOT, however, did not send the eastbound bridge out for rebid in the fall of 2006. Instead, it waited 14 months, and during that time, no work was done on the eastbound bridge. Finally, the bids for the eastbound bridge were opened January 25th of 2008, 4 days ago. Instead of saving taxpayer dollars, however, MnDOT's delay and decision to fire Lunda only increased the cost. The lowest bid for the eastbound bridge was $60.1 million. Remarkably, that bid came from Lunda. The other bids, you'll note, were from Ames at 62.3, Kramer and Sons at 63.9, and Flatiron, who got the 35W work at $118.4 million. Apparently, they're still under the impression that we accept the high bid rather than the low bid. The bid that MnDOT will likely select is $3 million higher than the bid it rejected 14 months ago by the same contractor. Work on the eastbound bridge is expected to begin in April of 2008. The projected completion date is now October of 2010, 3 full years beyond the original project completion date of November 17, 2007. The original project cost for both spans of the bridge was $58 million. With the new bid, the Lakota Bridge is now expected to cost $103 million. I apologize, that figure is actually in error. Based on MnDOT documents that I just reviewed this morning, it now appears it'll be $111 million, so virtually double what the original cost was. MnDOT estimates the economic cost to commuters and businesses of failure to complete the eastbound span at about $36,000 a day, or nearly $40 million for the three-year delay. Just to put this in perspective, you know, I said this, and I didn't just make it up, that this is among the most notorious and over-budget and long-delayed bridges in the country. I asked a legislative analyst to put together the bridges across the country just to give me some perspective. Are we, you know, am I losing my perspective because this is in my backyard, and I hear about it from people every day? So I asked him, you know, tell me across the country, how does this thing stack up? Chris, you want to go through these quick... Among the very worst that can be found that got a lot of notoriety was the Benicia Martinez Bridge in San Francisco. Initial cost was $286 million. Their new cost was $1.2 billion for a net change of $914 million. So relatively speaking, the Lakota is not this bad, but this is an example of a bad bridge. 4th Street Bridge, also in San Francisco, they apparently have a penchant for these things. That one doubled in price. They had notable overrun factors with delays and design issues. Third was a pedestrian bridge in San Diego, California, $12.8 million. That one nearly doubled in cost up to $22.8 million, a $10 million increase. Next was a suspension bridge, Dallas, Texas, $65 million initial cost, went up by $48 million and ended out at $113 million. Fifth was toll bridge seismic retrofits in San Francisco. Went up $3.2 billion in because of street costs, contract costs, and schedule extensions. Clinton Keith in Marietta, California, $25 million. New cost was $34.5 million, went up about $10 million due to water quality and construction costs. The Ohio River Bridge in Portsmouth, Ohio, initial cost was $28.4 million, new cost was $38 million, went up $9.6 million. They had problems with the river, design issues. It was 2 years late as well. Next is the Potomac Bridge. That went up about $500 million, net change of 28.4%. Next one is number nine, the State Street Bridge in nearby Milwaukee. That went up a few million dollars, got quite a bit of attention because it was took a long time to get done, and went up 25%. Tappan Zee Bridge in Hudson Valley, New York, went up $29 million over the base cost of $121 million. Got a lot of attention in the along the East Coast. Number 11 is the Indian River Inlet Bridge. That went up $20 million over an initial cost of $130 million. So where does the Lakota fit among all of these notorious bridges that have gotten lots of attention across the country? We have gone up, and again, I apologize because we got the number wrong. MnDOT figures actually have this even higher. The initial cost was supposed to be $58 million. It's now coming in at $111 million for a net change of about $53 million, not $45. So I apologize for that slide, but it actually is worse than what we represented there. A net change of over 77% on $45 million. It actually is closer to 90% with the figures that MnDOT provided. In terms of the Dirty Dozen, I was going to congratulate them on being number four. They're actually number three on the list among the most notorious long-delayed over-budget bridges in the country at actually $53 million over budget, which would put them in the 90% figure. So we're not... when we talk about the purpose of having this group together, I don't like to have to call people in during the off-season, during the interim, but this is a big deal. This is clearly among the worst in the country that any state has ever encountered, and it is making a huge difference to commuters in Minnesota. It's also, we want to find out kind of where the money's going to come from. We're talking $53 million more than was originally anticipated, and I don't know if that means we've got to hold spaghetti dinner fundraisers or something for MnDOT, but it's an awful lot of money, and I want to make sure that we know where the money's going to come from. With that, Commissioner Molnow, I appreciate your patience. I also appreciate your willingness to come back and visit with us once again. And in deference to you and your position, I expect or anticipate that you probably have some comments that you would like to share with the committee. I also anticipate that you have other places to be in addition to just sitting here with us today. And while you are welcome to remain as long as you can, I won't be offended in the least if you need to leave and attend to other responsibilities. I know that you're well represented with other members of your staff from the department. With that, Commissioner Molnow, thank you again for joining us here today.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do have a written statement, and we do have a few folks we would like to have present to you. But I do want to thank you for giving MnDOT the opportunity to present further information about the Lakota Bridge. Let me begin by again expressing MnDOT's regret that circumstances have delayed the completion of this project. We fully understand that communities close to the project have suffered disruption and inconvenience. We greatly appreciate their patience, their sacrifice, and their understanding. Unfortunately, when faced with project challenges, the proper course of action is not always the fastest. At last Friday's bid opening, Lunda Construction Company was identified as the apparent low bidder for the eastbound span of the Lakota Bridge at the price of just more than $60 million. We now look forward to construction beginning in April and completing the project by fall of 2010. Mr. Chairman, for today's hearing, MnDOT has prepared a presentation outlining our bid letting and contracting process and how this process has been applied to the rebidding of the eastbound Lakota Bridge. Before this presentation, I'd like to remind the committee of the overall scope of the Lakota project. This is a $300 million project with 9 state and local construction contracts and 7 contractors. 8 of the 9 contracts have been completed. Furthermore, as part of the one remaining contract, the westbound Lakota Bridge was completed in the fall of 2006, providing 6 lanes of traffic in both directions. This represents more traffic capacity than existed prior to the project. Errors in the design of the main river bridges were made in 2002 by the state's design consultant. Those errors were discovered in 2004 during construction of the westbound span. Both east and westbound spans had to be redesigned. The westbound span had to be retrofitted, and the cost of both spans needed to be recalculated. This led to negotiations on new prices with the contractor, Lunda. We were able to reach agreement on a new price for the retrofitting and completing the westbound span, an additional $19 million, or about 60% above the original price. But we were unable to reach a settlement with Lunda on the price of the eastbound span. I'd like to stress that Lunda is not responsible for the design errors, and that we greatly appreciate Lunda's work on the project. In this instance, however, Lunda and MnDOT could simply not reach a negotiated agreement. Despite the delay, we continue to believe that rebidding the eastbound span was the only viable course of action to move the project forward and protect the interests of the taxpayers. Rebidding this work was also recommended by both staff in the Attorney General's Office and the Federal Highway Administration. The rebidding has provided the state a new price established by the open market, not by closed negotiations. A competitive market-based price provides the state a more solid foundation for which to recover the damages from the bridge designer. And we will be very aggressive in seeking that compensation from the designer. The new bid also differs from previous negotiated offers in that it provides greater price certainty and a set completion date. These and other benefits will be described in greater detail in the presentation. However, Mr. Chairman, the questions posed by this committee are significant. Should a government agency, when forced to redesign a major project that's under contract but not yet under construction, negotiate a new price at 140% or more above the original bid? Or should the agency rebid the project through an open, fair, and competitive bid process? A negotiated settlement may save time, but rebidding more closely complies with the state procurement laws. We believe we made the proper choice in rebidding the project, even knowing it would cause delays. I respect that some members of this committee have a different opinion. Mr. Chairman, this is an important issue, not just for MnDOT and other state agencies, but for all state government units. Therefore, I urge this committee to request that the legislative auditor review MnDOT's decision to rebid the eastbound bridge. I am confident the legislative auditor will provide a thorough and objective analysis of this issue, collecting input from your committee, MnDOT, from Lunda, the FHWA, and the Attorney General's Office. The outcome would not only benefit MnDOT and this committee, but other government entities as well. I appreciate your consideration of this suggestion and look forward to working with you and the legislative auditor on this inquiry. I'd like to, so we better understand the contract award and process, I'd like to turn this over to Joel Williams for the bid process presentation, if I might.
Commissioner, if I might just follow up briefly on the suggestion that the legislative auditor review the process, would you also be comfortable with asking the legislative auditor to review the, I guess, 15-month period of time that it took to rebid the project? And I'll tell you why I asked that is because there were a number of folks that contacted me both anonymously and by stating their name that said that this delay in rebidding You know, the stop work order went to Lunda in October 2nd, 2006. The project was not rebid, and the bids opened until January 25th, 2008. A period of about 14 or 15 months that it took to rebid the eastbound span. Any number of individuals contacted me, and some, frankly, internal to your department, and other contractors that have worked with the department, and said they were boggled that a process could take that long, that the reasons that MnDOT had given didn't make any sense to them, that at best it was maybe a 2 or 3 month process or appropriate time in which to rebid. There was, and I'll just say it out loud, there was a lot of folks that said they suspected it was because MnDOT ran out of money and was taking money from the Wakota Bridge that was supposed to be spent here and instead needing it to be spent elsewhere. Well, and that it was akin to the person that has a whole bunch of bills and they keep one creditor at bay while they pay off another bill over here and so forth. My question to you is, if we invite the legislative auditor to take a look at it, like you've suggested, would you be comfortable with them looking at the delay as well, or the 14-month process that it took to rebid the project?
Mr. Chairman, I certainly would. And I would like to, just to ease your mind, it seems like you're a little troubled on that issue, as you have other folks who are as well. In a contract, when you have a contract, and this was just a small portion of a larger contract, the availability for other construction companies to come on site before it's released from the first construction company can't happen until they've completed their work. There is a delay there caused by that, and our bridge folks can explain that to you in better detail than I can, but that is, there is some reasoning aside from the financial reasons. So I would not mind at all if the auditor would look at that, because I think if you look at the way our contracts are written, you'll find that that's in there, and I think you have all the documentation to do that.
Well, as long as you brought up documentation, and then I look forward to hearing from the fellow that you referenced. Last night, your folks delivered to me a letter that referenced this document. Remember how we talked about how we were going to disclose all the documents and so forth, and I got 80 boxes. I built Fort Wakota in my office. And then last night I get this document, and it was on for 40 pages, single-spaced, of all the documents that you intend to keep secret. Now, when you and I got together a couple of months ago, I indicated that it was going to be your best efforts to disclose all the documents to us. Now I get this. It's 40 pages of documents, and as best I can tell, every single document in here talks about cost, or it talks about delays. At the very heart of the issue before us, you disclosed 80 pages or 80 boxes worth of kindling that caused the death of a lot of trees, but you didn't get to the heart of the issue, which is the cost and delays. And I would ask you, as long as we've talked about the legislative auditor taking a look at the 14-month delay and the reasons for rebidding, would you be comfortable submitting these hundreds of documents that you've refused to disclose to our committee to an independent, and I would recommend even Representative Holberg is kind of an expert on data practices. There's a nice fellow that wrote an article in the St. Paul Pioneer Press, our former guru on data practices, that if you want, let those folks take a look at the documents that you contend are secret and find out if they legitimately are, because it seems awfully convenient to me that the main documents, the main issues that we're interested in, which are cost overruns and the delay, are the very documents that you refuse to disclose. So can we come to an agreement as you're sitting here about, let's put these documents in front of an administrative law judge, or perhaps a group of three consisting of Representative Holberg or someone else that you're comfortable with, and some other data practices people, because it'd be very good for us, I think, to see those documents, and I think it'd be very good for MnDOT to share those documents.
I will make a commitment, as we have in the very beginning, and since Betsy Parker does all of the work on the documentation that you have received and her staff, I can tell you that we follow the letter of the law, and that law is written to protect proprietary issues that contractors have, but also information that can't be released ahead of the completion of the project, simply because those figures and amounts may have an influence on the bid we just received. There's a lot of reasons why we can't release those. Anything that was withheld, however, can be looked at by the state auditor, and I have no problem with that if you'd like to see them.
Well, can we agree, though, whether the auditor becomes involved or not, and that's a separate committee, a separate choice by the auditor. I'm just asking if we can find somebody that we both trust. You can have your counsel there to argue why these documents should be kept secret. We'll have somebody on behalf of the legislature, not a partisan person, mind you, but just somebody there on behalf of the House to also take a look at the document. It will remain non-public. But then there can be some discussion about, because these descriptions that you provide here, it's one line about it's a email from somebody to somebody about costs, but it doesn't actually indicate whether or not or go into any sort of detail. I guess we just have to kind of take your word for it that these documents are supposed to be secret. And I'm just asking you, would you be comfortable with somebody independent that you trust making the decision, going through these documents one by one, and determining whether or not they really are public or non-public, whether you should be able to keep them secret?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to let Betsy Parker address that, but I will tell you that we do follow the data privacy. Secrecy is not the word, it's data privacy, and that's to protect a lot of interests, including the taxpayers of the state. So I will have Betsy respond to that, but by law, I don't believe we can do what you're asking us to do, but Betsy can explain that to you.
Ms. Parker.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. The documents that are listed in this privilege log that was given to you last night that says revised January 25th, a majority of them are there at the request of Lunda Construction Company. The department, as the custodian, the owner of those documents, is required by law to make a determination on the data classification of every document in its possession that is requested by someone else. And when Lunda asserted that some of those documents were protected by trade secret status because they contained proprietary information or information Lunda deemed proprietary, we are required by law to take that claim seriously. And so we did actually review every single document, and I'm talking about thousands of individual pieces of paper and emails, and we divided them into two piles, those that we believed were legally justified, substantiating the claim of trade secret status, and those that we believed were not. And as you have mentioned, with respect to those that we believed were public, Lunda has agreed that those are public documents and those have been released. With respect to the rest of them, Lunda has not agreed, and as a result of the claim they made to us in our examination of it, we believe that they retain their trade secret status. The Data Practices Act requires agencies to make these determinations. I think that the department cannot agree to have some third party review these. There are proper methods provided within the Data Practices Act for the review and for the purposes of determining whether data is public or non-public. And one of those methods is to go to court, and another, I suppose, could be to give it to the legislative auditor, because under law, the legislative auditor is bound by the same restrictions that MnDOT or any government agency is, which is that when we give the legislative auditor data that we believe is not public, it retains that status in the hands of the legislative auditor, at least for the duration of their review. The legislature and people outside of the legislative auditor's office and other government agencies are not bound by the restrictions in the Data Practices Act that prohibit the release of classified information. So there would be no difference between us simply making it available to the public and giving it to some person other than a court, the legislative auditor, or another government entity as defined in the Data Practices Act.
Well, and unfortunately it makes it very difficult for the taxpayer, very difficult for this committee to figure out whether or not you all are acting appropriately or not. in terms of this now $52 million overrun, nearly doubling the price, when we don't get any documents that talk about that get to the guts of the cost or the delay. And it sure smacks of something inappropriate when it's the contractor and MnDOT that refuse to share and make it transparent in terms of what's gone wrong here. Just expressing some frustration with respect to it. It's hard to hold anybody accountable, and maybe that's the goal, is not to hold anybody accountable during this process, because you don't share any of the information, so nobody can be held accountable for it. The final topic, Commissioner, and then I look forward to seeing the presentation. Yes.
If I might, I think
Representative Holbert.
The testimony relative to Lunda's request to keep some of this private, it is likely that there will be lawsuits relative to the costs associated with the design flaw. Who's going to be held accountable for those? I don't think, I mean, you're an attorney, I'm not, but I don't think it's unreasonable for Lunda to want to keep some of that information close to the vest, knowing that in future years there's probably going to be quite a bit of litigation over who's going to be held accountable for the increased costs resulting from the design flaw.
And
I don't know if there's an ability to delineate what portion or what elements are deemed private due to Lunda's request versus MnDOT. I don't know if that's able to be brought forward or not. You're an attorney. I mean, you would probably advise your client not to put out in the public realm all kinds of information about their costs and process heading into what's going to be probably a number of lawsuits.
Yeah, although, you know, frankly, Representative Hallberg, if the lawsuit is the breach of contract claim by Lunda versus MnDOT. And they seem to be the ones that are gathered around these documents, not letting anybody else know about them. Eventually, they're all going to come out anyway. What's wrong with a little sunshine? Transparency and letting people see the documents and know what the costs are, know why the delays were incurred, and moving forward. I think we owe the taxpayers who are going to pick up the tab for $52 million more to know what's going on here.
But, Mr. Chair, there will also be lawsuits with the designers of the original bid that had the design flaw that started this whole mess in the first place. And so I think there's another entity out here, that being the engineering company that designed the bridge to begin with. And my understanding is that MnDOT will work very hard to hold them accountable for the costs associated with that design flaw.
And speaking of that, Commissioner, is that your intention is to collect that additional $52 million from the design firm that put forward the faulty design?
As I said in my statement, we are going to be very aggressive at doing exactly that. And to be able to do that and make the taxpayers whole, we have to make sure that we have facts and figures that support the increased cost. And that's one of the reasons we felt that it was very important to put this out on an open bid to rebid the project, so we had that exact information, because without that, it may have been quite difficult to prove. But with that, we certainly have a very good chance of recouping much of the additional cost.
Is it your contention, Commissioner, that HNTB, the design firm, is responsible for the $52 million overrun?
Obviously, a court will make the final decision, but they certainly were responsible for the misdesign of the bridges when we started and when we let the contract. So obviously, they have some responsibility in the additional cost. Correct. What that will be, as you well know, will be decided in the court.
And I'm not asking what the courts are going to do. I'm asking, is it your position that HNTB is responsible for the $52 million in overruns?
That will probably be what our claim is. We will obviously additional costs to the project associated with that design error. We will try to recoup, make every effort we can to recoup on the taxpayer's behalf.
And you believe the $52 million is due to the design error?
If you look at what we have today, most people would say yes.
My question was, do you believe that the $52 million is due to the design error, or are there things I'm missing? If I had your documents, I would know this. I don't have your documents, so I'm just asking you. Do you believe the $52 million in overruns are due to the design error, or are there other causes?
On the two bridge spans, I do believe the design error contributed and caused the overruns for that project. So whatever the cost overruns are, I do believe are related and directly related to the misdesigning of the bridge project. Yes.
And that actually, in fairness to you, I'm guessing that if that means that it's more than $52 million at the end of the day, if there's change orders and so forth, that that's the amount that you believe that HNTB is responsible for. So if it turns out to be $60 or $70 million, that is the amount that you believe HNTB's design flaws is responsible for.
If you're asking me to affirm that, I can, but people have to understand as well that the new design of the bridge took additional steel, took additional resources. Those things, because that's what the design should have reflected originally, we will probably pick up those added costs. But the actual retrofitting and the some of the delay and all of that obviously are directly related, and we will try to recoup that. But what it would have cost us for the right design, we probably will pay. I assume that will be the negotiation. But we will hold them accountable for all costs over and above what that bridge should have cost us, both bridges, yes.
Okay. Senator Sulson?
Yes. I just want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for this hearing today. And I think it is important to have this discussion because while we can talk about all of the things that went wrong, I hope that what comes out of this is what could have been done differently. And I think that that's where all of us can learn, because when these things happen, what have we learned? And I do appreciate, I guess, Commissioner, that you have noted that you appreciate the patience and sacrifice of this community, but you don't have our understanding. And that is where we have seen MnDOT sometimes at its very, very best in the last year. Your team has done incredible things in terms of expanding the lanes on 94 near the U of M. You've put the 35W bridge into overdrive. But with this project, we have not sensed any sense of urgency at all. And I think that is what is so disappointing. And I think that's where all these questions really revolve around, is where was the sense of urgency along the way? And that's why I think we are questioning these delays, because we've seen you at your best. We've seen your department at its best. And that's where I believe I'd like to know, what have you learned from this? And what will you do differently in the future so that no community, Representative Zellers, ever has to go through what the Southeast Metro has gone through? Our businesses are struggling, and they don't understand why it's taking 3 years to complete this this second bridge. And if you could possibly share that with us in context of some of these questions. And I don't mean to do that to point a finger as, well, you did this wrong or that wrong, but what can we learn, or what could the legislature do to ensure that this never happens again?
Commissioner.
Thank you, and thank you for your question. But I will tell you, as I said in that statement, that not always the most responsible, as it pertains to the law, is the quickest, but it's what we need to do. And that's what we did in this case. We understand there are hardships. There always are when construction occurs, no matter where it is or how long it is. We understand that, and we have sincerely tried to work with folks as best they can as issues came up to help folks so that they're the least impacted. We do that continually. But I will tell you, maybe that's what the auditor will help us discover, if it's a good idea to actually put out on bid a contract that was not started, a portion of the contract that was not started when it was accelerating as high as it was, so that we have an opportunity then to recoup those costs from the main purpose, from the main people that we believe caused a lot of that added cost. So it's not an easy balance, but we have to stay within the law. And I would assume if you would ask other contractors if they would have thought it was fair, or if they might have even thought about some legal lawsuits, if we had a new design that was 70% more than at least that's as close as we came to 170% more of the original bid, and we negotiated that out without putting it out for public bid. I have a feeling many people would have questioned that, including some of the other contractors. So we would have been putting the state at risk. So we really try to minimize that, but that it's a very delicate balance, and it's not an easy one. And perhaps the auditor can make a determination that at all costs, without consideration of anything else, we should move forward and do that. We, along with the Federal Highway Administration and the Attorney General's Office, felt that was not appropriate.
Commissioner, in follow-up, so the question was, is there anything that you would have done differently? You know, in hindsight is always 20/20, so I won't use this and then jump on you and say, well, see, you did that wrong. But our goal in this committee is actually to make some final recommendations, and we made them in a preliminary fashion, shared them with you, got your response. We could have just issued them in final form. That wasn't the goal. The goal is really to come up with something that is productive and proactive. So I ask you the question, is there anything looking back now that you would do differently on the Lakota Bridge? Perhaps we can learn something from that with respect to others. Or was everything absolutely 100% perfect?
Nothing is ever perfect, and none of us are either. But I will tell you that, yes, we've learned some things and things we would do differently. You can, as you go through the presentation, as we proceed here, you'll see some of the things that we do and some changes that we possibly are making or have made already or are continuing to look at. So you will see some things.
Can you give me an example?
I can't give you an exact example right here and now, no.
Okay. Is there somebody that's going to come up from MnDOT that will walk us through what we've learned from the Lakota Bridge situation from your department?
Well, what you're going to see is what we were told we came here to do, and that is talk about the award of the Lakota Bridge and the contracting process, and then answer any questions you have as related to that.
It looks like you have a phone-a-friend here that's maybe able to answer that question.
I'm going to be able to answer that. You know, this is one of the best people in the country, and we're very fortunate to have him, and I'm glad he's here today.
Mr. Dorgan, can you answer specifically that question Senator Saltzman posed about what, if anything, we've learned or whether things went?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. And for the record, I'm Dan Dorgan, the bridge engineer for Minnesota DOT. Mr. Chairman and Senator Saltzman, certainly there are learnings we need to take from this. This has been a tremendously bad experience for not only the department but for the communities, and we recognize that. As we responded, Representative Atkins, to your our December 10th letter responding to you, noted that for future projects of this size, we have decided to go to what we call a peer review during the design process, where we utilize an independent company to review the design of the consultant designer. So that's an additional step, one of the learnings that we've taken from this project. And in fact, we've already employed that on the I-35 bridge that's under construction at the moment over in Minneapolis. MnDOT has retained a separate engineering company to review the design builder's design. So for major projects of this size, we intend to do that in the future to hopefully avoid the same scenario we experienced on Lakota. So that is one of the steps.
Are there any others? The commissioner referenced that there were a number of things. Are there other specific things?
I'm uncertain from the contracting process. I think we'll have to continue to look at the events on Lakota and see from our contracting process if there's also learnings that we have from that. So I should, I guess I qualify that to say that that's probably not the only thing that we will change, but I apologize at the moment I don't have another one in mind.
Okay. Senator Saltzman, the follow-up, we've got Representative Biggin, Representative Magnus. We'll take those questions, and I want to have I promised the commissioner long ago that we'd hear from their presentation, so we'll do that next then. Senator Saltzman.
Just a brief follow-up, and perhaps, Mr. Chair, this is something for your time to think about, is that there seems that there was a tremendous fault with the whole contract process, that when you have a design that has this sort of, you know, catastrophic sort of failure to it, that we're held hostage. that if there was no way to speed up the rebidding, that when the design flaw was found, there was no way that this project could have been remedied, that's an issue. Because this could happen again. I mean, potentially, even with the design review. So that is an issue with how the contract is drawn up. I would hope that that would be something that you would be able to look at, or if it's an issue with the Attorney General or this committee, of how there's a way for the state to be protected and the people who are then held hostage when we have to go through a bid process that does not serve anyone very well at all.
One thing I'll remind you, Ms. Dorgan, is that Ken Price from HNTB actually testified at our last hearing that it was MnDOT that insisted on using this design, the design that proved to be flawed. Whether that's true or not, it's not for me to say. I guess it's with respect to his credibility or whomever he was working with at MnDOT. But he said, when asked directly the question, he said it was MnDOT that wanted this design, not necessarily HNTB's first choice. Representative Bigham.
If I may respond to that.
Please.
Okay. It's correct that the preliminary design of the, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it is correct that the type of bridge selection was MnDOT's selection. And HNTB vied for that design along with other companies, and they were selected for that. But I would also remind you, and we covered this quite thoroughly in our December 10th response to your inquiries, Representative Atkins, so it is in our letter. This style of bridge has been successfully built in a number of locations throughout the country. We talked to a number of DOTs. We found over 12 examples of segmental box girders with three whips. Only two of those were found to have some cracking issues, and those bridges did not require retrofit. So, again, the problem here is not the type of bridge. It is the design that was performed on that bridge. So it's not an issue of structure type. I would like to clarify that.
And I suspect HNTB, the designer, may still have a different perspective. We can possibly hear from them later. But Representative Bigham and then Representative Bigham.
Thank you, Chair Atkins. Commissioner, I don't know if you know this, but I represent the district where this bridge, every inch of this bridge is. And hard to believe, because this is in the news a lot, but the area feels a little forgotten. Furry Motors, Bartles, Snootsies, the people who sit on the bridge and delayed congestion and the accidents that occur. My question is, I feel this is not necessarily delayed. We opened the bids last week, and I know we've seen like pen pals because we write letters back and forth together answering each other's questions, but when are you going to award the bridge? Is it going to be in a timely manner? Are we looking at 4 weeks, 6 weeks?
Commissioner, isn't 30 days, I think, yeah?
We have to have the contract itself has to be looked at by admin and others to make sure that it's a legal contract and it fulfills all the obligations that we had in our request. And that takes 3 to 4 weeks. And then a contract, if it's a viable contract, it would be awarded. And as I said, construction would start this April.
Okay. Commissioner, assuming that it is, that everything comes in hunky-dory and it satisfies all your criteria, are you prepared to award the bid then within 30 days?
Absolutely. It okay. will be awarded, as I said in my opening statement, and work would begin in April.
And there is no issue about the additional cost? I know on the STIP, I believe it showed $51 million. This is obviously now at $60.1 million. There's no need for us. When I go back and I talk to the folks at Fury Motors or I have lunch down at Stockman's, I'm not going to have them be concerned about the... And they're calling me right now. Here's the fellow from Stockman's. But the fact that the bid came in a little bit higher than it was supposed to is not going to be a concern.
Well, any time a bid comes in higher than we, our expectation is a concern. That doesn't mean that we're not going to do it, and we have made a commitment, and we've continued that commitment to finish this project, and we will, as I said, start in April.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. And Representative Bigham, do you have a follow-up with respect to that?
I guess all I would say is that the frustration is gonna lie within those local businesses. So, if I guess what I'm what I want to say is that it would be nice to be more accommodating from the perspective when you say this is in the best interest of the taxpayers. It's not. Awarding the bid, finishing the bridge, is in the best interest of the taxpayers.
Representative Begum, before I get to Representative Magnus, I get very angry if people have their cell phones on, so make sure you all turn your cell phones off. I'm sorry that happened. Representative, that was actually my mom. I'm hoping.
Oh, gosh.
Representative Magnus.
No, I won't say any bad things about you if your mom's watching.
Well, no, I'll send my mom after you if you do.
And I met Representative
Lilly. She's a 5-foot-2 spitfire.
I met Representative Lilly's mom the other night, and I don't want her mad at me either. So, but I do have a question while the commissioner's here, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, you indicated in your testimony here that that by the fall of 2006, if I wrote this down correctly, it had three lanes going in each way. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman, what was the previous capacity of the bridge?
It was Commissioner. Three lanes in each direction.
Well, Representative Magnus.
Mr. Chairman,
are you suggesting we should just quit while they're ahead? We don't need the eastbound bridge?
No, Mr. Chairman, I'm just saying that's a 50% increase in capacity, is it not? Madam Chair?
Representative Magnus, you probably don't want to go there because you're going to get a number of folks. There's people sitting on both sides that have driven over those new lanes that kind of zigzag. Have you ever been over a bridge that zigzags?
Mr. Chairman,
it does, and it goes up and down, and it's
Mr. Chairman,
quite
I
a.
Talk to a real guy about road.
But that's why I'm suggesting we probably that gets more towards the whole transportation issues and.
Well, I've been over that bridge, Mr. Chairman, and so I knew it was working anyway. But I asked this because I don't travel the bridge every day like some folks in the room do, and certainly you folks do. And you brought up some good questions, but it's confusing to us that aren't in the area and don't travel it a lot, because we have to look at the whole state transportation system. And so when we look at this, we say, wait a minute, you got a 50% increase in capacity. So is it the approaches or what's that's the question I have.
Well, and with due respect, Representative Magnus, I'd suggest that when we start talking about the actual composition or design of the bridge, that probably is beyond, and I think you serve on the Transportation Committee. That is beyond the purview of this committee. From a commerce perspective, what I can tell you is let's go there at about 4:30 this afternoon.
Yep.
You can have dinners with Zellers and I at Tanucci's, and we'll get in line to cross that bridge, and by virtue of its configuration and trying to get across it, we'll sit there for 30, 40 minutes before we'll finally get across. And had this bridge been done November 17th, both spans of the bridge, folks wouldn't have to do that. We're costing commuters and businesses millions upon millions of dollars per year based on MnDOT's own figures because the bridge isn't done.
Well, that was, again, Mr. Chairman, that was my question, because there's someone sitting from the outside looking, and I looked at your Dirty Dozen bridge, and I saw several of those in the pictures where the bridge just stopped. So my question is, were any of those bridges operational at all during the delays? And how does this compare with the Lakota? Because during your opening presentation there, that's what I gathered from those bridges, that most of them, if not all of them, were not operational at all.
Actually, several of them were. There were a number that were retrofits. In fact, the largest project on there was a seismic retrofit in California. And the bridge that we're talking about here today, the eastbound span, right now, it literally looks like a ramp that Evel Knievel would jump over.
Mm-hmm.
You get to the edge of the approach, there's this huge span across the river, and then the approach on the other side. So all we need is, Evel Knievel to take his best shot, line up some school buses or barges or something, and away you go.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the issue that's before us. And Commissioner, I promised you a long time ago that we'd... let you get back. I know you've got a presentation that you want to walk us through, and I appreciate your putting that together as well.
And we have Joel is here as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Gentlemen, if you'd just identify yourselves for the record and then proceed with the presentation, we'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Joel Williams, and I'm MnDOT Contract Administration Engineer.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name for the record is Nick Thompson. I'm the area manager for MnDOT's East area.
Gentlemen, welcome to the committee. Mr. Williams, are you going to lead us?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you for letting me and committee members make a short presentation today, and Nick will follow with some more specific details on the project. I'm going to talk today a little bit about a short overview of the contract award and approval process that is used at MnDOT. And I work in the Office of Construction for the State Construction Engineer. And our office is the office that accepts the bid and makes awards on projects. And I'll let you know that these procedures that we follow, that I'll briefly go through, are based in part upon the requirements found in our standard specifications for construction that we've incorporated into our contract. So with that, I'll start with the bid letting process, if I could. Our bid letting procedures, MnDOT holds approximately 13 bid lettings a year, and the number of projects and the bid letting varies from 1 to 30 projects. The bid letting is normally held on the fourth Friday of the month. We do hold two bid lettings in June for a large number of projects before the end of the fiscal year, so we normally have one in mid-June, at the end of June. It's important to note that bids are due at 9:30 at MnDOT on the Friday morning of the bid letting. We receive bids in the form of hard copy proposals and also electronic bids. And just to give you an idea, approximately 90% of our volume of our cost of our projects comes in electronic bids, and probably 75% of our projects are bid electronically. And those bid results, as we open the bids after 9:30 on the Friday mornings of the bid lettings, are immediately posted as we announce them. Those bid results are posted on the internet. We also then, the morning and after the bid letting, we call our first audit. We review the bids for responsiveness. We check to see that the contractors have included a 5% bid bond. There are various forms and requirements such as non-collusion affidavits, and that they've acknowledged all addenda to the contract. And we also have to do a visual check of the hard copy bids that we receive. And in the morning, after the letting, we send those hard copy bids over to our Department of Administration so that they can data entry those into an electronic file for us. And then I'll move on to the second audit, which happens the Monday following the bid letting. We review the bids and arrive at the final bid results. What happens there is we merge the electronic file from the electronic bid with the electronic file from those hard copy bids that we had keyed over at administration. And at that time, we generate contract materials, including a bid abstract and the contract in bond form. And I'm just trying to make these explanations to you so you can kind of understand. But the bid abstract essentially includes all the bid items that were bid on the project. It includes an engineer's estimate for each one of those items, as well as each of the contractors' bid for those items. And Mr. Chair and committee members, if you're interested, I do have copies of an example of a bid abstract, if that's of interest. Next, that bid abstract, after it's generated, is sent to our estimating engineers, the Office of Technical Support, and our bridge office, if there's a bridge on the contract. and they check for compliance with the Code of Federal Regulations, Title 23. And essentially what that is 635.114 requires the agency to award the project the lowest responsible bid and to justify the award. So this analysis is done of the bid to determine if it meets that compliance. We also at that time notify our Office of Civil Rights of the contractor's DVE goal commitment. So clearances for award. Before we award, the question came up previously on when do we going to have award on the project. I know that's of interest. Clearances we need is that recommendation of award from the estimating and bridge estimating engineers. Also, the Civil Rights Office clears the project that the contractor has either met the goal or has a good faith effort that has been approved by the Civil Rights Office. Our Land Management Office also looks at any permits, such as the DNR, Corps of Engineers, or any municipal or utility agreements that need to be executed prior to award of the project. And then on full federal site oversight projects, we also request the concurrence of Federal Highway Administration in the award of the project. As we discussed a little bit earlier, it was mentioned here that MnDOT has 30 days after the bid letting to make contract award. On occasion, and it's probably a pretty rare occasion, it could take longer if there was an agreement that was not executed, if the Corps of Engineer permit wasn't in place, etc. We would issue a request or an extension request letter to the contractor. That's a pretty rare occurrence. The Office of Construction and Innovative Contracting, upon award, sends out a notice of award letter along with the contract and the bonds, which are the payment and performance bonds, to the contractor. And if warranted, the NPDES permit for a warranty bond, in the case that those are applicable. At the time we make the award of the project, that bid abstract that I mentioned, with all the unit prices that the contractors have bid and the engineer's estimate for those prices are all posted on our internet website. Now I'll talk just briefly, I think this is my last slide, on execution and approval of the contract. Per the MnDOT standard specification 1306, the contractor has 10 days then to return those contracts and bonds to the department. They're reviewed for form and execution. Once they're received back from the contractor, there's three copies of the contract. There are performance and payment bonds with original signatures, notarization, that's all required. There's also several other things we check, the human rights certification and authorization for the contractor's representative. If all these documents are acceptable, we go through the signature process, which takes probably 1 to 3 days. It's routed for signatures by, there's a delegation of authority from the Commissioner of Transportation, which is done in the MnDOT Construction Office, the Department of Finance through MnDOT Finance, and the Department of Administration through MnDOT Contract Management. And once all of those signatures are obtained, then the approval letter is mailed to the contractor and the district, and the contractor then has notice to proceed upon the contract start date.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Can I ask you one question? How long have you worked for MnDOT in this capacity?
I've worked for MnDOT in the capacity of the contract administration engineer, I believe, about 4 years.
Okay. Have you ever encountered a rebid process that has taken 14 months or longer, like the Lakota Bridge has?
Mr. Chair, I don't recall. We have rebid projects. We probably rebid 3 to 5 projects a year. I don't recall the timelines of those. I can't say. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. Then that's fair. Would you be kind enough, though, to check and let us know?
Certainly. Mr. Chair, you're interested in finding out the time frame for rebid on the project?
Right.
For a period of time?
Well, I asked for the period of time that you've been there because I figured that would be most appropriate. If you want to go back 5 years or 10, I'm not looking to go back since statehood or anything, Mr. Williams, but just something to put this in perspective. Zellers, I think, wants to go back to statehood, I think, but then he also wants to hook you to the polygraph, though. I think that's unreasonable, but if you would be kind enough to maybe go back 5 years, I just want to get some perspective on this rebid process and the length of time that it took. And And the basis for that question is I've had a number of calls from people that have said 2 or 3 months maybe, but 14 months is out of the question. I don't know whether that's credible comments or not, and they're not here to cross-examine them either. So I'm putting the question to you just to get some perspective on whether or not it's reasonable.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and if I can, committee members, if I can comment, there are various reasons for rebidding projects, and the time that it would take rebid would depend on a number of things. You could be redesigning a project, adding features, subtracting features, but certainly I can check into the times for MnDOT and rebidding projects in the last 5 years or so.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. And if you want to add those factors, you know, to give us sort of MnDOT's perspective on why this one may have taken considerably longer than others, and add those, you know, I fully expect that you will, and put the best put the light on it that you want to put on it. That's just fine. Thank you, Mr. Williams. Ms. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll now follow up with Joel's comments on the general contracting process to give you the information that we can give at this point regarding the lighting that we had last Friday, the 25th, on the remainder of the Wakota project. For information, this is the project number, state project number 1985-132. At this point, as Joel mentioned, we have an apparent low bidder of Lunda Construction. This is information that was presented earlier in the hearing. These are the four bids that we received on Friday, and this is the information that is publicly available at this point. I think it's important to note what this project is. It's a project that includes the Eastbound Bridge, but it also is additional work in addition to the bridge. It has roadway work on 494 for the approach to the bridge. It has two ramps, retaining walls, a lighting system for 494, traffic management systems, and then the bridge itself. Those are all the elements that the contractors were bidding on in this process that was let on Friday.
How much of that, Mr. Thompson, is the bridge itself?
That's, Mr. Chair, on this slide here, I tried to break out that information. At this point, we'd be better able to answer that once the abstract is publicly available, because the contractors were bidding a variety of items in addition to the bridge. So at this point, I can give you what the estimate of what our non-bridge items were. I think it's important here to compare what we advertised and let on Friday compared to what we were negotiating with Lunda in the November and their final offer in November 2006. When we were negotiating with Lunda Company, then it was in the auspices of their original contract, which included both bridges and all of 494, and that contract said project number 8285-80. We had asked for their best and final offer in November of 2006, and the document provided, and it's been provided to the committee in the past, dated November 20th, 2006. Lunda made two different offers under different contracting methods. There's similarities to those bids, but they basically had the alternative one, as it was mentioned in the letter, had a price of $56.8 million. Alternative two had a price of $58.9 million. Alternative two had a price of $58.9 million. Those prices were only for the eastbound 494 bridge. There was no other items within that offer, as there was with our letting on Friday. They had different contracting methods proposed by each alternative. The $56.8 million as specified in their offer was based on unit prices, and that's a price that was based on estimated quantities. Their offer was that if there was higher number of quantities than was estimated, that price would go up, and that was part of their offer. In both of their proposals, they indicated they'd have a spring 2007 start, open to traffic on November 1st of 2009, and completion of the project on July 1st of 2010. Project that we let on Friday to the parent low bidder, again, it was Lunda. at a bid amount from Lunda of $60.07 million. After the abstract is publicly available, I said we will be able to tell which part of that is the bridge, but our planning estimate going into that project, into that letting, our planning level estimate estimated there was $3.8 million in non-bridge items in that advertisement. So the remainder, and then we had a bridge planning estimate too. So there's significant amount of work in this letting that is non-bridge and that was not part of the offer that was being negotiated in November of 2006. This again was a competitive low bid contract process. It was advertised in mid-December and awarded on January 25th. We also released the plans earlier than that December advertising as preliminary plans to contractors to try to generate as much competition and as much involvement for contractors as we could to get the lowest bid. Per our contract, we have a start date in spring of 2008. We will open to traffic per contract no later than September 3rd, 2010, and a final completion October 29th, 2010. There are, and as the project develops, that September 3rd date for open to traffic is the last date that it could be. It could be open sooner if they progress with the contract. So, Mr. Chair, I believe that this would that $3.8 million is the estimate in our non-bridge part of the contract.
And I appreciate that, Mr. Thompson. Your letter a few days ago said you wouldn't disclose the engineer's estimate for the bridge until the bid was awarded.
Right. And this is not an engineer's estimate. This is a planning estimate done earlier in the process. There is an official engineer's estimate that will have that could have different items than this. This is our planning estimate from earlier.
Okay. And it appears, though, that the estimate for the bridge work would have been $56.3 million.
The $3.8 million is MnDOT's number for the non-bridge work. The $60 million is Lunda's bid. Within their bid, we'll be able to break out what their item costs are for those similar non-bridge items. We don't know what those are yet, and we will be able to give that to the committee once the contract is awarded.
And Ms. Thompson, my point, though, is if I'm reading it right, you don't have a line for the estimate of the bridge work, but if you just subtract the non-bridge work from the bid amount, it would be right around $56 million. It's not the engineer's estimate, but did you have a MnDOT estimate, planning estimate, for how much the bridge work was going to be?
For our SIP approval, we requested $51 million, and that was our planning estimate. And that $3.8 million is within that planning estimate. There will be an engineer estimate that is official that could be different than the SIP, and that engineer estimate I am not privileged to know, or nor is it public at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was sitting here, and Mr. Thompson, I is kind of just getting a little feel for this. It looks to me, and it sounds to me like what you're saying is the taxpayer is getting more bang for his buck. It looks like you're saying we're getting the bridge, of course. We're getting approaches, ramps, lighting, miscellaneous things that weren't in this last bid. It sounds to me like you're saying we have a solid bid. So am I correct in those assumptions?
Ms. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, committee member, appears to be a very solid bid. Obviously, we're in the detailed process now of analyzing the bids. But it also appears to be that the bridge part of the contract is most likely within the range of their last offer. But we did get this through a competitive open process that received four bids from different contractors.
Well, that's a good point, Mr. Thompson. If it was about the same as the offer a year ago, and I think that's why there's the frustration that you're sensing here. And I know you've been part of the project since, I think, day one, right? Or very nearly, whenever day one was. I thought it was when I graduated from high school a long time ago. But the frustration that many in our area and across the Southeast Metro is that you had the same bird in hand over a year ago and opted not to go forward with that. And the project could have been underway and done a year ahead. I'm sorry, Mr. Simpson. Representative Simpson, I interrupted you.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm just what I'm getting at is that it looks to me like we're going to have a final project with a completion that will be completed with these items in it that would have been cost overrun if you would have accepted the bid back in November of 06. Is that correct?
And Mr. Chair, Representative, actually, these are items that were in part of the original 2002 project. When we repackaged this for a new project, you had to draw lines that separated the current Lunda contract from where the new contract would be. And the current contract, for a variety of reasons, could not be just the bridge. It also had to be a line on the road of 494 where one contract ended and the new contract started. These are all elements that were going to be part of the original one, too. So we deducted these non-bridge items from the Lunda contract as well as the Eastbound Bridge from the contract. And so there's not new items, it's just a repackaging of the project and separating it from the original project.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Simpson. Mr. Thompson, I had been told that the pilings that were part of, or perhaps it's for Mr. Williams, but the pilings that Lunda had already purchased and were going to use for the eastbound span, that in the new bid, the rebid, that there were different pilings that were specified, which may have added several million dollars to the price or to the bid price. Can you confirm for me whether or not that in fact occurred?
Mr. Chair, we don't know what Lunda bid on the piling price, but the piling as specified in the bid, this most recent bid, was the piling specified in the original contract.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Sultan.
Yes. I'm just under question, Mr. Thompson, is that in the letter that of December 10th to Representative Atkins in response to an earlier hearing, it notes that MnDOT agreed to pay Lunda an additional $19 million, and that included $10 million for retrofit work, $4 million for settlement of all claims, and an additional $4 million incentive. What I'm wondering is that I'm sure along the way the fact that this contract was ended with Lunda, that there are perhaps some damages. I understand from some of the contractors that they were asked to submit claims. Is that a separate process from this bid? Because if you just look at the $60 million here, is Lunda, I mean, the fact that they, you know, purchase things, is that going to be part of this, or is that a completely separate process? And if Lunda does submit, you know, these claims to MnDOT, is that going to be part of the dollars that are asked from HNTB, and how can they document that? Is this another lawsuit we're going to be potentially looking at?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we did not terminate the contract with Lunda. We did eliminate work from their existing contract. They still are under contract for their original work and are working on site till July. That contracting process is separate from the contracting process that we just let on Friday and will be awarding. So they are two separate processes, and they will, the any claims that would be made under the separate process would be settled under the original contracting process. Though when we did the supplemental agreement for the Westbound Bridge, the $19 million, it did include settlement of all claims under that process. So they really need to be treated now as two separate projects, two different claims that could be, there's no lawsuits at this time, but they'll be treated as two separate projects.
Senator Sultan.
So just to clarify, then, Mr. Chair, so potentially there could be some additional costs under that original contract because the contract was terminated, and the fact that Lunda is still there when they were anticipating to be done by 2007. That's completely separate. So there may be, and if that's the case, is that something that you would be trying to recoup from HNTB, or will the taxpayers be responsible for that as well?
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, there always, if that contract is ongoing, so there could be potential claims on the contract, as there are with contracts. We'll take the advice of the Attorney General's office on whether, on which parts of any additional costs would be part of the settlement negotiations with HNTB. So there's always a potential for that, yes.
One more question, Mr. Chair, if I may. If you had been able to settle with Lunda a year ago, were claims going to be part of that? Since it was part of the original contract, would their offer of the their last offer of potentially $58 million have been to settle all claims, or would claims still have been potentially sent to the state, submitted to the state?
Mr. Chair, Senator, when we, in November 1st of 2006, we asked for a final offer from Lunda that had some conditions we put on it. We asked that their offer include settlement of all claims. The offer that they gave us on November 20th of 2006 in response to that request did not indicate that it was an offer that included settlement of all claims.
Yes,
we, of course, did not accept that offer either.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there any other questions for Mr. Thompson or Mr. Williams? Or any other comments from Mr. Thompson or Mr. Williams? All right. Gentlemen, thank you very much. I know the commissioners had to leave. Is there anyone else from MnDOT? I'm looking, Mr. McFarland, anyone else that you have that you want us to hear from? Okay. Thank you. Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chair, if I might go back to the data practices issue, it's my understanding that there's reps from Lunda here in the room. I'm not familiar with them, but I've been told that there are reps here. I was also told that they were reminded of the power of the legislative subpoena, and in part that was why they were here. But I'm wondering if we could hear from them on two issues. Number one, their rationale for asking that some of these documents remain private, and number two, their willingness to reconsider that position.
In fact, Representative Holberg, your timing is splendid. The reason I was asking if there was anyone else from MnDOT is because I then wanted to invite the Lunda folks up. So, is there anyone here?
Occasionally.
You're good. You're good. Is there anyone here on behalf of Lunda? If you could come up to the table, please, and we'll start there, gentlemen, if you... And if you'd be kind enough to identify yourselves for the committee and for the record, and then we'll take some testimony from you.
Sorry,
welcome back,
Chairman, members of the committee, Larry Lunda, Lunda Construction.
And you are joined by?
Dennis Banke, Vice President, Lunda Construction.
Gentlemen, thank you both for coming. As I did with the Commissioner, before we started asking specific questions and with deference to Representative Holberg, If either one of you have comments that you want to share with the committee or a statement that you want to share with the committee, you're certainly welcome to do that at this time. If not, we'll just start taking individual questions. Mr. Lunda, is there anything you care to share with us off the top?
I feel for all those people that have been affected by what's transpired down on this project, the traveling community. Tanucci's, we stop in there regularly and eat there. But we've been affected too, and I guess we're reeling from all the bad press that we've received. We do a lot of private work for municipalities, private owners, and especially the AP line that's gone out over the last week, where we've been vilified as the Buddha contractor, the contractor that was fired. We feel that we've done nothing wrong. We completed the first bridge on time. In fact, we completed it earlier than Supplemental Agreement 28 provided for. We gave a proposal for the redesigned bridge in November of 2006. It was timely given, and it was a number that was competitive. And I believe the bid results last Friday bear that out. So we've gotten a lot of negative press over it, and we're struggling with that.
Thanks, Mr. Lunda. Mr. Mackey, any comments before we get... Okay. Representative Holberg raised a question. I don't know if you heard it as you were sitting there. Why don't you just ask the question again, Representative Holberg?
Mr. Chair, thank you, and thank you, gentlemen, and I can appreciate this hasn't been fun for anybody. Earlier, the Chair talked about a list of, I don't know how many pages of documents, 40 pages of documents that were deemed to be classified as private. We had testimony from MnDOT that, in fact, some of those documents were deemed private as a result of your company's request to keep that information private, most likely under proprietary business standards. And I'm wondering, number one, if you could share with the committee your rationale for keeping those documents private, number one, and number two, if you have any interest in reconsidering releasing any of that information at this time.
Mr. Linda.
We were asked to take a look at those documents prior to bid, and we felt a lot of those documents had information that were pertinent to the bid on Friday. And for the purpose of maintaining our documents and our numbers and our overhead numbers, we didn't want that disseminated to our competition. Last week, MnDOT sent over two boxes of documents that they asked us to reconsider. And we went through those boxes on Friday, and except for one page out of the two boxes, which was a internal overhead cost, internal to our company, we said we don't have any issue with giving this information out. What's on that list of documents presented by MnDOT, I don't know what they consist of, but I assume many of those we could probably reconsider, because just as those two boxes were, and give a lot of those documents over.
Thank you.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you.
Mr. Linda, then I think what we should probably do before you take off, and I'm going to just look to the audience, Ms. Parker, if you want to come up. The vast majority of these you're claiming are privileged because of Linda claiming that they were privileged, just so we're clear. Ms. Parker, welcome back.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. The vast majority of documents on that list are on that list because Linda claimed there was a privilege, that being trade secret status. I tried to flip through it just a few minutes ago. It appears to me there are 12 to 15 documents on that list about which MnDOT claims a privilege or some classification under the Data Practices Act, attorney-client privilege, something like that, that we would continue to assert. But the majority of the list is because of Linda's request, not because of MnDOT's desire to conceal the documents.
Okay. So thank you, Ms. Parker. Mr. Linda, as long as the bids are now opened and not quite awarded yet, but that should occur within 30 days, are you still claiming privilege over those? And I very much understand why you wouldn't want your competitors to see your numbers before a competitive bid is open. But now that the bid's opened, everything is available to MnDOT and will be made public shortly. Do you have any reservations about releasing the rest of those documents?
I believe we'd certainly take a look at a lot of those. I think anything that has to do with the schedule, we won't have any issue over that. I believe items such as our internal overhead rates, going forward, we would want our competition to see what our internal overhead rates are, our cost of insurance, our bond costs. So we'd have to sit down and review that. But I believe, just like in the first two boxes that were sent over to us, a lot of that could be released.
All right, so Ms. Parker...
I can't say for certain all.
I understand that. Ms. Parker, before you leave, I don't blame you for trying to get out of there, but you just heard Mr. Linda indicate that anything having to do with schedule, he no longer is claiming privilege. However, anything to do with costs, that they want to take another look at and may release some of those. So as you sit here having heard that, will you share with this committee then those documents referenced in your 40 pages of privileged, alleged privileged documents, will you share those that have to do with schedule?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we will be glad to send over anything that Lunda is willing to release.
Okay. And Mr. Lunda, is it? Can you give me a time frame in terms of how going through this long list, which ones you might want to?
Wait just a second.
Let's let him finish, and then we'll interrupt him. Mr. Banky?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I went through all the boxes that they had. To add to Larry's comment, some of these documents are also from other companies, subcontractors, suppliers that have production rates. Some of that is proprietary. So we would need to contact them as well before we release those documents. We would be happy to look at the list, because Larry said, I think there's a lot of stuff there that you can have at this point in time.
Is it, gentlemen, is it reasonable to think 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
I haven't seen the list, but it took several days all day long to go through all of the boxes.
Well, you've been...
I would think 2 weeks is more than adequate.
Fair enough. And I understand you put in a lot of time going through them before. I'm hopeful that as you review the documents, I mean, there's literally hundreds now, but they've all been identified. They've been ones that you've gone through, that you'd be able to fairly rapidly determine whether or not you're still claiming privilege over them or not anymore.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Hallberg.
Here's the thought that this contract isn't awarded within 30 days. I would assume that legal counsel may advise Lunda to wait until the whole contract is signed, sealed, and delivered. So, you know, you talk about 2 weeks, but I would assume that anybody would probably advise them to make sure that this contract is in fact executed. I mean, like I said, perish the thought, but if for some reason some of these review agencies find a problem, I'm sure they don't want those documents released.
And Representative Hallberg,
I know everything is signed. I don't think 2 weeks is probably
fair. Is that we would anticipate then, which should be in all likelihood, will be within 30 days, but we'd expect that after the bid is actually awarded, for you then to identify which ones will be disclosed, and we will receive those then from NDOT. An excellent point, Representative Hallberg. Representative Zellers, did you have a comment?
That was the comment. Yeah. As an attorney yourself, I didn't think you'd advise Mr. Lunda to make statements without the first consulting counsel. God forbid a lawyer should go without a billable hour there, and the opportunity presents itself to have quite a few here, but I also don't want him, I don't want the committee and those who have been waiting so long to have that expectation of in 2 weeks we're going to get an answer, and Mr. Lunda goes back and talks to counsel and says exactly what Representative Hallberg said. You got to wait a month or 2 months, whatever it may be.
Well, I would remind you, though, that June 21st, 2007, long before the 35W bridge collapsed, long before any hearings were held, we first asked for their documents. And it's now been going on, 7 months? And we find out last night in a document hand-delivered to our office that there are still 40 pages, single-spaced, of documents they intend to keep secret.
Just more proof you can't trust lawyers, Mr. Chair.
I don't know who the lawyers are here. Maybe Ms. Parker's a lawyer, but I like her. And the efforts that MnDOT made to disclose, 80 pages of various law or 80 boxes of logs and so forth. But the key documents are the ones that they've withheld. And whether that's legitimate or not, I'm not making that call, but I'm sure for the sake of the taxpayers, for the sake of legislators, for anybody that cares about transparency in government and wants to know what things cost and why this delay has occurred, we sure as heck ought to be able to review these. So the sooner the better. And that said, Representative Burns, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, you again used the word secret, and I don't believe that's accurate. I don't believe that's a genuine word. You're a lawyer. I'm a lawyer. We both know words are very important. And I think what you're doing is asking Ms. Parker to violate the law by releasing information that's not public. The Department of Transportation, the person who sits in that role, I think as you know, is personally liable for releasing things that are not supposed to be released. They rely on the Attorney General's office to provide them legal advice, who happens to be in a Democrat. I don't think it's fair or accurate And that's what the goal of this hearing should be, to find out what the truth is, for you to use that word secret. I don't think that's the accurate legal word. And you're asking the Department of Transportation to violate the law. We've now gotten Lunda very graciously to agree to provide information, and we appreciate that. But I really object to that word, especially when you're asking Ms. Parker to violate the law, which puts herself in personal jeopardy. Personal jeopardy.
Thank you, Mr. Burns. It's not my word. They use, look on page one, is they use the word secret. That's why I've been using the word secret. Representative De La Forest.
Mr. Chair, you're not, we don't have that. You didn't pass that out to us. We're getting
it's,
documents.
It's in your book, literal.
Well, we got this today, then. And you've had this
you told me I'm using this term, making up the word terms. I'm just saying it's in their document. I didn't just pull it out of the air. And Ms. Parker, please don't violate the law. Representative De La Forest.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I did have a couple questions, but they're not related to Lunda, so I'd be willing to stand down until we're finished with the Lunda folks. But I did have a couple questions I wanted to ask.
Fair enough. We'll talk to the Lunda folks and see what sort of questions people have for them. Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chairman, I have a quick question for Lunda. Okay.
Please.
Okay. At our last opportunity to visit, you mentioned an open book was offered, an open book process was offered to MnDOT. Now, I was just kind of wondering if you just spend a couple seconds and refresh my memory of what you meant by that and what point that you offered that to MnDOT, because to me that really seemed appealing. So you were willing to do the bridge with an open book, and they could oversee and see what your real costs were, and maybe our bridge could have been done much earlier. And can you kind of add some thoughts on that?
Ms. Lena, that was offered November 20th of 06. We offered two proposals on that date. The open book is basically what it says. We'll provide all the documentation with a certified payroll, and have our books open to the labor that we paid, and go by a formula so we can document exactly what the costs were for labor and equipment and materials. We'd show all the invoices for the cost of materials, all the ready-mix tickets, all the reinforcement steel that was used in the structure, and we also capped it at $58.9 million, I believe. $58.9 million, meaning that if the total were to go less than $58.9 million, we'd be satisfied with that, and but we'd not ask the owner to pay any more than $58.9 million. If it went over $58.9 million, we would absorb those costs ourselves. Our other proposal was a firm price of $56.8 million, and that would be adjusted only for increases or decreases in quantities. So we're using the quantities that the state has provided in their plan, and we put a unit price on each of those prices, and if the quantities increase, we would expect to be paid by the incremental amount of increase for that item. If they decrease, we would expect to be paid less.
Representative Lilly?
Mr. Chairman, and thank you, sir. To me, that was, just in simple terms, that seemed like a heck of a nice offer to have an open book on this whole process and just have an open opportunity for MnDOT to do this project. And you know, I'm on the East Metro. I'm north of this project, but I spend a lot of time going over that bridge. I work at Northwest Airlines. That's how I get to work, or if I'm on my way to Joe's Bakery down there in South St. Paul, or even playing hockey with the governor down there at Wacuda. So it's hard to get to those games, but it's really a dangerous situation. So I'm glad. I mean, it's not really our preview, which was brought up about the laning, and I hope they really deal with some of that kind of urgently. Thank you for that offer of open book. I mean, if we had done that, when would have the project been done?
sir.
As MnDOT laid out here, it would then open the traffic November 1 of 09. And now I believe the
thank
projected date is November of 2010 or October of 2010. Can I just
September 3rd, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Benke. To clarify on the $58.9 million not to exceed figure that you offered MnDOT, whatever, a year and a half ago, is the $60.1 million bid that you've just had all but accepted, is that a not to exceed figure as well?
No, it's... It would fluctuate based on quantities again. If the quantities increase, we'd be expected to pay at our unit price, be paid at our unit price for each of those line items, which increase. So if the plan that's prepared by the state and their consultant misstates the quantity of concrete or reinforcing, and the quantity goes up or down, we'd be expected to be compensated for the actual quantity.
And how about the 58.9? Had the quantity gone astronomically up, it was a not-to-exceed bid. So if the quantity had been way off, you would have just absorbed that additional cost?
I believe that's the correct statement.
That's what our proposal was.
Okay. That's interesting. It seems... I guess I agree with Representative Lilly. I didn't, when I heard that before, and maybe if the MnDOT folks have a response to that, why you wouldn't take that swell deal, but it strikes me as a heck of a deal. If there's no risk, no downside risk, and the contractor was willing to step up and absorb anything in excess of that $58.9 million, why not do it that way? Now you have a higher bid with the possibility that if the quantities are misstated or miscalculated by MnDOT or the designer, it could well go several million dollars in excess of the $60 million bid. And Mr. Joseph, I'm glad you're back. I'm sure there's a reasonable response for that.
Again, Nick Thompson from MnDOT. And the bid that's in the information they referenced, the reference comes from the November 20th letter. The open record time and materials, I'll start with that one. That is a process that we do not use, we haven't used. And in their offer there, they indicated that their overhead rate would be one that would be over and above what is allowed in our specification as part of that offer. So that's one of the reasons we could not accept that bid. In the quantities one, it did not include settlement of claims in the supplemental agreement process. We wanted to get settlement of all claims, like we did on the Westbound Bridge.
Does this new bid include settlement of all claims?
No, but it's part of the supplemental agreement process. That is what we seek. We also, we had indications from the Attorney General's office and the Federal Highway Administration that they could not agree to that type of settlement at that point without, under that contracting process. And lastly, I do not believe we received the quantity unit price estimates in the final offer, which we will receive in this offer they submitted on Friday. And so that if quantities go up and down, we have a fixed price, unit price for each of those quantities.
Yeah, but Mr. Thompson, so what if you didn't receive the unit prices on the 58.9, if it's a not to exceed?
But the not to exceed prices. No, Mr. Chair, that the price is based on unit quantities. And so you need that information to justify the settlement, and we didn't receive that information. I don't believe.
Can you tell me, by the way, Mr. Johnson, why you'd object to an open book process? That seems to be, for the owner,
right.
That seems to be the most advantageous. You can literally, they throw open every, I assume by its nature, they throw open every invoice, every cost, every quantity, so that you can see it. Why would you object to doing it in that fashion?
Mr. Chair, as I indicated earlier, there's like in their offer, they indicated they would not agree to our overhead rate. That is part of our specification. They proposed we have a 62% figure in the specification. They proposed, I believe, 140 or 120 as part of their settlement. So those are things we can agree to for our specification. We have a different method, time and materials method, that is very similar. That could have been used. It was used for part of the time on the Westbound Bridge. And that was part one of the options that was considered among the parties.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Lunda, unless there's other folks, I am going to get into a little bit of a touchy subject because it, I think it's still reflected on internal documents at MnDOT about the cost of the potential claim for, there was, the DRB said that MnDOT breached their contract with Lunda. There's internal documents at MnDOT, some of which have been disclosed, I assume most of which have not, about some additional costs that they may have to pay to Lunda. Does Lunda still have a claim or intend to pursue a claim against MnDOT for damages under these contracts?
There are costs on the first contract that have not been paid or resolved.
Can you give me a ballpark or some sort of parameter in terms of how much those costs are? Are they $15 or are they $15
million? It'd be somewhere in between.
Can you find more of a Fenway-sized ballpark, a little smaller, maybe Midway Stadium ballpark?
I don't think we're at liberty to say. We haven't made that final calculation yet. So,
okay, Mr. Thompson or Mr. McFarland, do you have some parameter? I'm just trying to get my head around what the, you know, we're up to $110 million. Yeah. There may still be some additional damages by Lunda versus versus MnDOT. I just want some perspective on it. And, you know, 15, with fairness to Mr. Lunda, somewhere between $15 and $15 million doesn't give me a great deal of comfort.
No, it doesn't, but it may end up in litigation. We've hired a group that specializes in reconstructing so that we're able to establish what the true cost is, and I don't think it serves any purpose for me. And they haven't come up with that number yet. They're working on it right now. We hope within the next 2 months here that we will get that final number, but I don't think it serves any purpose for me to speculate and throw out numbers, which I don't have a feeling for right now.
And I'm not trying to push you into doing that, Mr. Lund. I understand your perspective on it. Understand my perspective, which is that these taxpayer dollars are mine and the folks around this table and the people sitting out here and the people that I represent. And I kind of would like to have a feel for just how much more, in addition to the doubling that's already occurred, how many more millions we might be talking about in terms of thoughts. Ms. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, is your question how much more settlement Lunda will be seeking as part of the elimination of work from the original contract? Is that the question?
My question, a little more specific than that, Mr. Thompson, is there a range that we're talking about? I wouldn't expect you to say, here's exactly what we think it's worth, but are we talking about $50,000, or are we talking about $5 million? Are we talking about $10 million? Just, I mean, somebody's got to have a handle on roughly what we're talking about here.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe we've got a range of numbers at this point. Lunda's still under contract for the original contract. So they're still doing work on that contract. Still work left through July. We do not know the impact that the fact that they received the new bid, the parent low bidder, what impact that would have on it. So we don't. I can't give you a range. I don't believe we have a range at this time.
All right. Well, it deeply concerns me for both of you gentlemen that apparently there is a potential claim out there that nobody seems to want to talk about that eventually would likely fall on the backs of Minnesota's taxpayers. So is there, I should ask that, is there any other questions on that line for Mr. Lunder or Mr. Thompson? Mm-hmm. All right, and Representative De La Forest, thank you for your patience. I know you had a question or two or a comment.
Well, I did, Mr. Chairman, and I tried to listen carefully now, as I believe at least in the interim here we are about to wrap up many hours of this committee's labor and time. And I've tried to listen to the testimony and review documents within the context of your rationale for the Commerce Committee holding these hearings as opposed to another committee, say transportation. And of course that rationale was the economic loss and caused by the delay, particularly by businesses located in the vicinity of the bridge project. And I'm wondering, there are about three questions I have that never have been answered as far as I can tell. And one of them is regarding the loss. Mr. Chairman, I pose the question to you. I'm not sure who else may be able to answer it. Regarding the economic loss that's been suffered by folks in your jurisdiction, in your district, where does that stand? I mean, we've seen the Dirty Dozen Bridge in the list, but the losses that have been suffered, where do those losses stand within the context of other losses that are suffered? I mean, we all know that regardless of a project, whether it's done right or wrong, comes in on time or is delayed, there is inevitably some economic loss. We haven't perfected a way of reconstructing roads and the like without affecting local businesses and commuters. Do we know where that is? Is it first? Is it 100th? Is it?
The best I can offer you, Representative De La Forest, in addition to anecdotal stories that I've heard from all the business owners, and it's not just business owners, it's people that are, you know, working folks that are just trying to get across the bridge. Representative Bigham earlier shared an email that she had gotten about if we would just have all of the MnDOT folks stationed in offices in Cottage Grove and Inver Grove and South St. Paul, and they all had to be present for meetings at 8 a.m. and they all had to leave by 5 o'clock and be home by, you know, 5:15, this would all probably get done considerably sooner. That was from one of her constituents, because they're all being impacted with every hour that they're sitting in their cars. But MnDOT had an internal number of $36,500 per day. Was the impact on commuters and businesses. They've suggested that for various reasons it might be less than that. Some of my constituents and Senator Saltzman's and others would probably suggest it's considerably more than that. These delays on a bridge that was supposed to be done November 17th of last year, 3 more years of not having customers be able to get to their businesses, 3 more years of not being able to get to work on time, or having to leave half an hour, 45 minutes earlier and sit in traffic and waste all that time, I'd suggest to you it's tens of millions of dollars by the time we're all done. But it's difficult to calculate. I go with the MnDOT figure that it's probably in the neighborhood of $36,000, $40,000
a day. Well, Mr. Chairman, when the deal of forests who live in Inver Grove Heights have a problem with that, they don't call your office always. They sometimes call mine.
But then they come to see me to get actual help.
Yeah, well, that leads me to my second question here is unlike any other project that I know of, this committee has invested hours of time hearing testimony and exploring this issue, and I'm wondering what your intent is, Mr. Chairman. Will either you or this committee be producing a bill to take some action? I mean, is there an intent to compensate the folks like Panucci's and Fury Motors for the losses they have suffered through no fault of their own because of these delays? Is this committee going to take any action?
I thought we'd take up a collection. We'll start down on your end and then pass it around to the MnDOT folks. You're right, it was through no fault of their own. In the very least, I'd like to come up with some recommendations, and I invited Commissioner Molnow to make some suggestions in that respect. Mr. Dorgan made one. The commissioner referenced that she said there were a number of examples of things that they had learned from this process. And I'm looking forward to receiving those. We got the one from Mr. Dorgan. I assume there's several more that we'll be receiving shortly. And that we will work hand in glove with MnDOT on ways to prevent this from happening any further. Commissioner Molnow's invitation to have the legislative auditor take a look at the process and make their recommendations, I think, is also a wise one. And if you can find some place to actually compensate all those folks that are sitting in traffic day after day, I'd be happy to work with you on that bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, like I said, that's all well and good. We hold the purse strings here, and I hope MnDOT finds ways to improve. I imagine with any complex project, anybody can find ways to do things better. So I was curious, after this committee, given our rationale for holding these hearings and investing all this time, I was curious if there was a goal, if you had a goal in mind at the end regarding the compensation, or at least as far as the committee's concerned and you're concerned, are we asking folks like Fury Motors to just absorb the losses, and perhaps MnDOT or somebody else will come up with a solution later?
Well, and seriously, if you have a recommendation on how to compensate those folks for these losses out of MnDOT's budget or out of some budget, I'd be happy to work with you on doing so. I think the folks would welcome it. The main thing, though, and I've said it since the very beginning, this is not an inquisition, it's not a witch hunt. The goal has been to figure out what went wrong and try to prevent it from ever happening again, not just on the Wakota Bridge, where we suffer through it every single day, but every one of us has projects all across the state of Minnesota, and no one should have to go through what these poor folks have gone through year in and year out for going on 10 years. And then you have the situation, and my heart goes out to the folks in the 35W bridge collapse and the victims of that, but it's going to be up in 1 year. And you got a lot of folks out in our neck of the woods that kind of, frankly, feel like second-class citizens now, that you can bid this thing in like 2 weeks, you can take a bid that's the highest bid, you can build it and have it done in a year, and we're sitting out here with a half-done, half-baked, over-budget, over-delayed project that doesn't look like it's ever going to get done. So, I'm sorry, you said you had a third comment.
I just had one more question, Mr. Chairman. It's obvious that one of the reasons, I mean, I find it ironic here, we're not having a witch hunt, but we're expressing frustration with MnDOT for following the very laws that we've created, for example, the Data Practices Act. MnDOT's law, and that's our law. We wrote it, we passed it, we expect them to follow it. And it's similar if you look at, through all these documents here, there is no question that there is an avalanche of hurdles that MnDOT and any transportation organization has to climb to get something done. I mean, all the way from stuff that I think is very relevant about engineering specs, all the way to contacting the Equal Opportunity Employment Office, which may be important but isn't directly related to the structural soundness of the bridge, for example. Have you had any contact, Mr. Chairman, or anybody with the federal bureaucracy about waiving some of these regulations and some of these hurdles? Because one of the frustrations I'm hearing is that time has not been of the essence here, apparently, regarding this bridge project. And, of course, having served on the Transportation Committee, I know that there are all sorts of hurdles. So has there been any action, or will there be any action? Will this committee be drafting a bill or taking any formal action to see if we can't get some of these requirements waived in order to accelerate the process, a much-delayed process?
Part of the reason to have the hearing was to find out what exactly, I mean, frankly, I had never seen that presentation that the gentleman from MnDOT shared on their process. That's why you hold a hearing, and that's part of the value of a hearing, is to find out those things, and if there's recommendations that we can make or suggestions we can make on how to move the process along in a faster way. And I'd welcome it. I don't think the word Democrat or Republican has been uttered. I think one of you guys did about the Attorney General, the Democrat, or something like that. But in terms of this issue, it doesn't cut on a partisan basis, I don't think. And I've never intended it to come across that way. The main goal has been to figure out, is there a way that we can help MnDOT and help the public and help the taxpayers get more affordable, more on-time projects and prevent this from ever happening again? And from what I've seen, there's lots of, you know, we don't have thus far a great deal of accountability. I think I'm the only one that's ever apologized for this project. In the history of the project, I was on Channel 2 when they asked, are you blaming somebody, or are you asking for an apology? And I said, so far it's all this. This is all I see from anybody, is we'll point at the contractor, we'll point at the designer, and the designer points their finger back. So at the end of the day, I take responsibility. And if that means having to hold hearings and find out what went wrong and make suggestions on how to move forward and prevent it from ever happening again, then we're going to keep on holding hearings.
So, Mr. Chairman, and hearings can be of value, but that seems to be taking a retrospective look at things. What can we do moving forward? As far as I can tell, we still have a bid process out there. There are still things that can be done and maybe should have been done to accelerate the process outside of a committee hearing. For example, if we want to go back to the 35W bridge, I know that that was an immediate effort up and down the chain of the elected official chain of command to talk to the federal bureaucracy, for example, about waiving certain requirements, about expediting certain procedures. And a question that I have that hasn't been answered in the committee hearing is, was there an effort made? And if there was an effort made, where did it break down?
Let's ask. Thank you, Representative LaForest. Mr. McFarland, will you approach, please? Or I believe that you're still, the commissioner's not here, otherwise I'd ask for the commissioner. What efforts have you made to work with the federal government to waive some of those requirements so you can get this done sooner?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bob McFarland, assistant to the commissioner of MnDOT for public policy. Mr. Chairman, we have not, the comparison to the 35W project and this project is one really of apples and oranges. with the 35W project, given its crisis situation, and given the federal money that has flowed to that project, you have to recall we have received, that project is in essence being funded fully by the federal government. We've received nearly $380 million of federal money for the rebuilding of that bridge and the recovery associated with the collapse. Along with that money and along with the federal government's interest in that project and under the crisis circumstances, they expedited processes, but they did not waive processes. We still had to go through all of the environmental reviews, all of the design reviews, but they committed through the president to expedite those processes because of the crisis nature of that situation. We have neither sought in this circumstance, because it is so different, we haven't sought similar expedited work from the federal government because it wasn't needed. This project has been designed, it has been redesigned, and we're ready to go to contract. We're looking forward to working with Lunda on the project.
Okay. With due respect, Mr. McFarland, there's a whole bunch of people in the Southeast Metro that would disagree with you on the need to get it done sooner and the urgency with which that needs to be done. And Representative De La Forest has family out there that would perhaps agree with that comment. But do you think there'd be any realistic chance of getting the federal government to do so with regard to the Wakota Bridge?
Mr. Chairman, I'd have to rely on our project folks to see if there are even any steps that, at this point, that require expedition. We've just gone through the bidding. The design is complete. We're ready to go to construction. What we're really talking about from this point forward to expedite would be to go to a much faster schedule, which would require more money or a change in the contract.
And just a final follow-up, is there anything else that we could do to make your jobs easier so that this wouldn't happen again? I earlier maybe asked it in a way that Mr. Dorgan or the commissioner didn't want to answer in terms of what would you do differently. Is there anything that we could do to help you to have a situation like this never occur again and be able to move it along more expeditiously so it doesn't take 10 years to finish a bridge that was supposed to be done in 4 or 5?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think that is a very good question, and I think it's a fair question. I would like to defer the answer to that to a formal answer to the committee so I can sit with the project folks and go through the steps and some of the barriers that we may have faced step by step so we can give you a very complete answer, but I promise that answer to you.
Okay. Thanks, Ms. McFarland. And I sort of took over your line of questioning there, Representative De La Forest. I'm sorry about that. But did that answer your question?
That's fine, Chairman Atkins. And undoubtedly, there are things MnDOT could do. Maybe it's part of their after-action review process. But again, I think it comes back this way. The executive branch only executes the laws that we pass and that they're passed in Washington. There ought to be some lessons learned for us, perhaps. I mean, I know, for example, back when Chairman Queasley chaired the Transportation Finance Committee, we underwent an extensive review of the permitting process for road construction projects, and we attempted to streamline it, and that process ended up ultimately going nowhere. And that perhaps is another area where we ought to look at instead of focusing solely on MnDOT. Maybe there ought to be some type of procedure and statute, because we're not always in session, granted, but maybe there ought to be some sort of procedure where if a bridge project gets into a certain state of affairs like this project has gotten into, where MnDOT has some latitude to waive or expedite or do something, where time becomes of the essence and begins to outweigh some of the other public policy goals that we attempt to accomplish by throwing regulation after regulation after regulation on these projects. And that's really where I was going, is there ought to be things that we can do to enable the executive branch to not fall into some of these pitfalls.
Well, and I look forward to receiving it. We had promised earlier from the MnDOT representative that oversees these contracts. We might be barking up the wrong tree in terms of maybe a 14-month is normal. If it comes back, though, and it turns out that this is the longest rebidding effort ever, and most of them only take 2 or 3 months, then I don't know that there's much that you can do. And all of the contractors, frankly, every single one that I spoke with said, 14 months? Are you kidding me? There's no excuse for it taking 14 months. 2 maybe? 3? And that's why I look forward to getting that data from MnDOT, because you might be have a, it's a great suggestion in the vacuum of not knowing. But if it's only a 2 or 3 month and this one just got away from them, then that's then maybe there's not a whole lot of need to make additional changes. Senator Saltzman, you're on the list.
Yes, and I just want to thank you, Representative DeLaForce, for the excellent questions, and that's exactly what I asked about an hour ago when the commissioner was here, was we certainly can talk all about this. But what have we learned? And that's why I want to commend Representative Atkins for holding these hearings, because that's our role as a legislator. I appreciate being invited to be here today, but you've raised excellent points. And I hope that this committee will be able to look at it. We certainly, in the Senate, I've brought this to the attention of different chairs and how we might be able to respond. So excellent questions. What have we learned? But along the way, when did anyone ever come to us and express this would make it easier? There was no sense of urgency. On the day that this last bid was advertised, I was on my way to the Capitol, and on WCCO radio, I heard 4 times between Woodbury and St. Paul that there was an accident on the Lakota Bridge, weaving lanes. The backup was all the way up to Oakdale, an additional 45-minute wait. Now, if that doesn't have an impact on business, I have constituents who call me probably once a week and report in, today I'm backed up to here. And that has an impact on our business community as well as consumers. So I just, believe that this is important for this community to be aware of, to be educated on how these decisions do impact our commerce and getting goods to market, because they're not, because they're losing money when this happens.
Thank you, Senator Saltzman, and thank you for joining us today. Folks, I'll give you a little bit of where we're at, and I know Representative Mandor, Representative Zellers are on the list for comments or questions. I do have a noon meeting. I'm happy to finish this up by, 20 minutes to 12 or something like that and not come back. Or if the committee desires and has a lot of other questions, then we'd come back about 1:30 and continue. So I'm going to kind of defer that, but Representative Mandor and Representative Zellers.
Thank you very much, Chair Atkins. I want to clarify a point here. One of the reasons I'm attending these meetings is as a representative of the Transportation Committee, that I can bring back some of the suggestions, some of the things that we learn here, and talk to cheerleader and figure out if there's something we can do legislatively. But I guess I just want to clarify, in reading the documentation I have here, after attending the last meeting, I have never heard a representative from MnDOT come and say regulation is the reason why this bridge has been delayed. And I guess I just want to clarify that, that's the impression. I'm reading here that there's an issue that we had a problem internally with MnDOT, with contract negotiations. We had a consultant that delivered a bridge design that didn't meet our standards, and we found hairline cracks in it. But nowhere in here did it say that the legislature in the state of Minnesota has ridiculous requirements that required MnDOT to jump through hoops, and therefore they couldn't get that process done. So I guess I'm looking for clarification from that, from anybody who can show me that documentation, because that's what I'd like to bring to Representative Leader and move forward on that if happy.
Well, and if there's anybody from here, that, from MnDOT, that wants to say that that was the issue, you're welcome to do so now, but I don't see anybody running to the table. But if that is the case, share that with us as well. We don't hold folks to, if you don't say everything in the chair, that doesn't mean you can't send a letter or communicate with us in addition to it. So, Representative Zeller.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one more question. It's to do again. I'll renew Representative Mandori, Representative Leader's purview on all this stuff. I mean, we're back to talking about the technical details of what it costs to build a bridge, what it goes into building a bridge, what it means when you say this specification versus that. Again, not wanting to forego an education. It's always good to learn. My wife's a teacher. Every night I get a good education at home. But this is the purview of the Transportation Committee. And, Representative Bingham or yourself, Mr. Chairman, was talking about the cost of the taxpayers. And I just had one question from MnDOT, and Representative DeLaForce kind of tweaked my interest in this, because we got a sheet here that shows cost, Lakota project cost summary. And I don't know if this is what it costs to put together all the stuff from this committee, but that's what I'd like to ask of MnDOT. How much time, we jokingly say we've taken down a couple of forested trees, but you know, I too am concerned about the money of the taxpayers that we're spending. And I'd like to know from MnDOT, if they can ballpark it, how much money has it cost them to go through this process that they may or may not have gone through in the Transportation Committee or will go through in the Transportation Committee? What's it cost to produce the 80 or 40 boxes, the time that it's these folks? I think we've got 8 or 10 MnDOT employees that are here that aren't working on transportation issues, that aren't working on the bridge. Yeah, I'm sure they're probably learning something about what we think about how their process goes, but I'd just like to get a ballpark of how much it costs us or costs the taxpayers to have this hearing, the hearing before, and to produce all the documentation that we've had here today.
Fair enough. Mr. McFarland or Ms. Parker?
And I didn't even take a shot at the lawyers for billable hours, I promise, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Parker?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. The department did keep track of some costs. We have actual costs that we have calculated of about $65,000 to respond to the data practices request, and we probably have another $20,000 to $30,000 for that response that we did not track accurately because we weren't tracking everyone's time. The initial copying took about 1,000 reams of paper.
Thank you, Ms. Parker. Any follow-up question,
yeah.
Representative?
Ms. Parker, so the data practices, just the printing, I'm assuming the man hours. What about the cost to have some of the folks here? I mean, the Lieutenant Governor obviously, you know, can set her own schedule, but for you know those that aren't either appointed or the non-political or non-partisan staff members who we're asking, whether they be engineers, whether they be project managers who are here, is there any kind of a cost estimate on the time, or is that included in this number that you've given us, the amount of money that we've spent on these two hearings?
Ms. Parker?
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Sellers, the number I gave you is solely for the data practices activity of collecting the information in response to the letter asking for documents or data in MnDOT pertaining to the Wakota Bridge. That includes, that's probably about, I don't know, a little over two-thirds of our cost of locating the documents, which took an extensive effort. We initially located in excess of 100 boxes of documents and sorted through them to determine what was relevant to the request, because everything wasn't. And then that required having people photocopy all of the original documents, because we don't send originals out of the agency, keeping a copy for ourselves, determining what was public or not public, dealing with the issue related to Lunda's objection to our making public some of those documents, and then identifying the very few documents that MnDOT identified that were subject to, we felt, attorney-client privilege or something specific to MnDOT. It was, we have never responded to a data practices request as large as this, including, I think, the 35W bridge collapse, although that had its own challenges and was going on at the same time. So we have probably spent several hundred thousand dollars responding to data practices requests, not just for Lakota, but for the two bridges in the past, well, since July, probably.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Ms. Parker, then I would assume if we're adding up the dirty dozens of how we're spending money on bridges, I would say then that this would probably be one of the top on the list, or the top, as far as you're considered, when it comes to data practices and the amount of time and money spent on, again, not that it's not a good idea to review to see where we can learn from, but the amount of money that we've spent here today is by far and above and beyond any other data request that you're aware of, or any project review, inquisition, vendetta, whatever it's been called. There's nothing that's topped the list other than this one.
Ms. Parker.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Zellers, we haven't kept detailed lists request by request, but this is the largest single request we've had to date.
Well, thank you, Ms. Parker. Mr. Chairman, I renew my objection in part on, again, I don't think this is the purview of the committee. Once maybe, but twice, we were supposed to be here to talk about how the contract bidding process was supposed to take place. We got back into the specifics of what girders, what, you know, support beams go into building a bridge. I think that there is a natural process, but I think that's under the Transportation Committee's purview. And the fact that we've spent, you know, at least in documented costs, you know, nearly $100,000, anecdotally we spent over that, probably hundreds of thousands of dollars to review something that another committee has purview on and should be looking at. I don't begrudge anyone, believe me, for those Senator Saltzman's left. If we want to get into the comparison of one bridge to another, and I do take objection to the 35W because I think that was a tragedy that, you know, none of us would ever want visited on any of our districts, and to compare that to this project, I think is crossing a little bit of a line. But I've got a road, if we want to get into this thing, that's had land purchased since the 1970s. It's not been finished. We do have an end. You don't have three lanes on one side, even if they are temporary lanes. We have nothing. We have green space, literally through the middle of my district, that can't be finished. But that's not the purview of this committee. It's the purview of the Transportation Committee. And the fact that we're spending taxpayer dollars down here again today, over $200,000-$300,000 worth of money for a hearing that should be covered by another committee, I think is a tremendous waste of the taxpayer dollars, and it should be covered under another committee.
Representative Ellers, thank you. In fairness, it represents 0.06 of a percent of the total cost overrun of $52 million. If that's not, and that doesn't include the $13 million per year of impact upon commuters and businesses and the commerce of the Southeast Metro community, so it's actually considerably less than that. But it seems to me that keeping an eye on the taxpayers' dollars and trying to support the small businesses and commuters of Minnesota certainly fall within the purview of this committee. And represent, we can go around and around about it, but I think it was definitely a important effort to make. And again, thank you to everybody for taking time out during your interim. Thank you to our friends at MnDOT. I know that you have worked very, very hard. I appreciate you coming here today. Thank you to Lunda for coming as well. I don't know if this will be the final time that we'll meet with respect to it or not, but we hope to come up with some recommendations. I also look forward to look at Mr. McFarland as assistant to the commissioner. You heard a handful of commitments that you and your staff made to supply a little bit of additional information, and we look forward to receiving that. Mr. Benke and Mr. Lunda, you indicated that you would share with Ms. Parker whether or not you have an ongoing objection to releasing some of those data practices, alleged privileged information. And that kind of concludes our wrap. Thank you again, everyone, for coming, and particularly our staff folks who did a ton of work. We're adjourned.